This is KZYX Philo 90.7 FM, KZYZ Willits and Ukiah 91.5 FM, and Fort Bragg at 88.1 FM. We also stream live at kzyx.org. Altogether, we're Mendocino County Public Broadcasting, listener-supported community radio. It's 9:01. Stay tuned now for Byline Mendocino. Good morning. Welcome to Byline Mendocino. This is a local media roundtable program where local journalists are going to join me to discuss the news of the week. I'm your host, Alicia Bales, and thanks for listening. Today, for our first edition of Byline Mendocino, I'm joined by three local guest reporters. First, Kate Maxwell is the publisher and founder of the online newspaper, The Mendocino Voice, MendoVoice.com. The Mendo Voice covers breaking news, community events, and special features throughout Mendocino County. Before starting The Mendo Voice with editor Adrian Bauman, Kate worked as a staff reporter for the Willits News. Welcome, Kate.
Thanks, Alicia. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. Michelle Blackwell is a freelance writer for the Fort Bragg Advocate News and the Mendocino Beacon. Her focus is in-depth features, particularly ocean issues such as the kelp forest collapse and abalone die-off, as well as other reporting. Before retiring to Mendocino, she was a public relations and marketing professional. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, and it's an honor to be here. Thank you.
It's great to have you. And on the phone with us is Aiden Freeman, the staff reporter for the Lake County Record Bee in Lake County. He covers all the headline news in Lake County, including local government, crime, wildfires, cannabis, and just about everything else. Thanks for joining us, Aiden.
Glad to be here, Lisa. Thanks.
Great. You sound great. So we, of course, the last couple of days have been listening to the national news. This morning's impeachment vote in the House Judiciary Committee came after a couple of days of debate that we've been airing here on KZYX. So let's turn back to our local news. It's been a while since we've had local reporting on the air. This week, Sheriff Allman announced his retirement. There's been a last-minute candidate announcement by Mari Roden for the 2nd District Supervisor's race. And there was a catastrophic fire that burned several buildings in Boonville. And what else are you guys following? Let's start with you, Aiden, from the Lake County Record Bee. What stories are you thinking are significant for this week, and why?
Well, here, one of the most recent things that's happened is Diane Fridley, a longtime registrar of voters for the County of Lake, was just hired back on an interim basis after the previous hire who replaced Fridley after her retirement about a year ago, Catherine McMullen, resigned, and I believe she moved to Sacramento. She resigned, and the county's been looking for a replacement. They hadn't turned anybody up. They put in the county clerk for about a week and then replaced her now with Fridley, who was hired on Tuesday. She'll be bringing back all the decades of experience she has for the March 2020 election, so that's an important one. Also, we've got the Potter Valley Project, sort of just updates, and that's an ongoing thing, which also affects Mendocino County. On that front here, the County of Lake was recently blocked from entering a small planning agreement group consisting of 5 members, a couple counties, and some nonprofits and a tribe that are submitting a feasibility study after doing some research into it to the Federal Energy Regulation Commission to move forward with options that are actually feasible for that project after PG&E's pulling out. To change gears a little bit, we also have a murder investigation going on. The 2 suspects in that who are in custody without bail both did not enter pleas at a court date this week. Last month, a body was found on the side of Scotts Valley Road. An autopsy revealed that he died from blunt force trauma and gunshot wounds. So that's progressing. Also on Tuesday, the local ag commissioner released the crop report for 2018, showing that agricultural numbers are down from 2017, but basically average for the past 6 years.
All right. So those are some headlines from Lake County. And Michelle, how about you? You work as a reporter on the coast for the Fort Bragg Advocate News and the Mendocino Observer.
Yes, I'm. It's the Mendocino Beacon.
Mendocino Beacon.
That's fine. I actually do feature pieces, so I'm not working on sort of the day-to-day emergency news that our other fine reporter in Lake County is working on. But one of the things that's coming up for me this week is the board of directors will be county board of directors will or supervisors, sorry, will be considering the integrated management program for wildlife management. And I did a piece on that a few weeks ago. It is a very comprehensive wildlife management program that has a lot of support from the ranching community, but a lot of opposition from the wildlife enthusiast community. So it will be an interesting event to follow, and I will be putting together a piece on that as well. I'm also working on an update on the abalone kelp urchin situation. It's time to pull together all the information that was available from last season, although I understand that some of the data is not quite yet available. But it's time to start pulling that all together and put together a piece in the paper to inform our community about what's happening out there under the waves.
Great. And Kate, what about you? Kate Maxwell from the Mendocino Voice. What stories are you covering this week?
So as you mentioned, some of them, Sheriff Allman announced his retirement this week. And so, you know, he's been local sheriff for 13 years. It's a significant change in leadership for Mendocino County law enforcement. He ran unopposed last election and I believe has been running unopposed for some time. And, you know, as such, got over 90% of the vote. But that means that election was, you know, not that long ago, and there's still some amount of time left in the term. And so Sheriff Allman is recommending that his undersheriff, Matthew Kendall, be appointed by the supervisors. But as people in Mendocino know, with other supervisor situations, this isn't the first time Mendocino County residents are looking at having a elected official position of some significance potentially be filled not by the candidate who was elected, but by someone who was appointed. We also, you know, for us, we cover the whole county, and it's been, the weather has changed. And so with it, there has been a slew of car accidents. There's been flooding that closed the 128. There's been power outages, and sort of we've shifted to looking at ways we can look at more long-term community resilience around the county as these sort of storm-related events occur. And then also, you know, of course, the Mendocino County elections, the filing deadline has happened. And so now we all know who are the people who have thrown their hats in the ring for the three different supervisors districts who are going to be up this year. So that's super exciting. So a lot of them have been putting stuff out before now, but now the race is kind of officially on. So.
Great. So that's a huge range of stuff going on locally from Mendocino County to Lake County, from inland to the coast. How do you all make sense of or prioritize what stories you're going to cover from week to week? And Aiden, let's go back to you from Lake County. Which of these stories you were talking about, a murder case, you were talking about the Potter Valley Project, some political news. How do you assess the impact of that, and what do you think the impacts are going to be of some of these stories that you're covering?
Well, I guess I'd say I try to cover stuff as it comes up. A lot of these things that came up this week were topics that I've been tracking that, you know, written on before, or at least been looking at as they were progressing. So new developments came up and tried to get something out on them as soon as I could. As far as the Potter Valley Project one, that was a little bit more less precisely time sensitive. It wasn't so much something that had just happened, but I was trying to update more in depth and look at why Lake County was left out of this planning agreement group. So that's a different sort of alternative. In general, we also get a lot of calls in from people that want us to look into things, so we try and prioritize that, but that just depends.
But you're just the staff reporter at the Lake County Record Bee, right? There's not a whole lot of you there.
That's true. I'm the only full-time writer for the paper, unless you count the sports editor, who also writes plenty of stories and covers all the local sports here, Brian Sumter.
And so let's talk a little bit more about the Potter Valley Project story that you published this week. You reported that Lake County has now been left out of the group that's going to go ahead with the plans to try to take over the Potter Valley Project, the dams up at the Eel River. And can you talk about what you found out? Why was Lake County left out, and what does that mean for Lake as the Potter Valley Project planning moves forward?
Well, you get different answers from different people depending on who you're talking to about it. So the different members, the five members of the planning agreement group, I wasn't able to speak to all five groups represented in that, or organizations represented in that group. But the few that I talked to pretty much had the same answer, was that they didn't necessarily exclude Lake County, who had been sponsored by one of the members of the group, Mendocino Inland Water Power Company, or Commission. Rather, they just decided not to expand the group anymore, based on what they see as a strict or quick timeline that they have to get this planning feasibility study into FERC in order to proceed with hopefully trying to come up with a solution for the future of the project. On the other hand, if you talk to Lake County representatives, I talked to a local supervisor here, E.J. Crandall from District 3, who in whose district the project is, at least Lake Pillsbury is in, which is created by Scott Dam on the Eel River. He says, he feels like the interest of Lake County might have been somewhat opposed to the general momentum of the group towards possibly taking out Scott Dam, or at least prioritizing the fish and the water downstream, because Lake County has a pretty unique position in that project, in that it has a community around Lake Pillsbury, which is formed by Scott Dam, so that community is at risk, whereas the other people, the other interests in this project aren't really affected so much by the removal of Scott Dam. And then a third perspective on that is Friends of the Eel River, an environmental group that has pretty opposite positions to Lake County. They also tried to get into this group and were similarly denied entry.
Right. So, and I've heard a lot from Friends of the Eel River, but I haven't heard from Lake County and the residents of Lake Pillsbury. So that's an interesting voice to bring into that discussion. Michelle Blackwell, let's turn to you. You talked about a couple of stories that you're covering this week, particularly the wildlife plan for the county of Mendocino. Can you give us a little bit more information about what's going on with that and what you found out?
Well, historically, the county relied on the U.S. Wildlife Services for monitoring and managing the wildlife in the area. And, of course, ranchers are in the situation where they are constantly trying to maintain their livestock and are always dealing with having to fight off coyotes and mountain lions, and in some cases it's wild pigs and bears, of course. And so they have a financial, and in many cases, many of them as well, have an environmental responsibility that they feel that they are fulfilling. And so they have their ideas of what they think should be done, and they believe that they should have access to services that will take care of what they consider problem animals. The wildlife enthusiasts, on the other hand, feel that we should have a no-kill program that is similar to the one in Marin County, which has been in existence for several years. The wildlife enthusiast group actually sued the county, so the county went through an EIR process to prove or to look at the different options that they had available, and the current preferred alternative is to return to using U.S. Wildlife Services for removing difficult predator animals. And the interesting thing about this is that it doesn't just cover predator animals. It also covers all kinds of anything, you know, a skunk and above, basically. So it's a very comprehensive plan. And but the focus and the issues that are basically bringing these two groups against each other really are the predator animals, and what is the best way to manage those. So it'll be interesting to see how the County Board of Supervisors responds to these different groups. Supervisor Williams was at the meeting that I went to that was put on by the wildlife enthusiasts, and he recommended that they work with the ranchers, try to find a solution themselves. So it'll be interesting to see what happens this week as they come together at the Board of Supervisors meetings and follow that story, and I'll be doing that.
So they'll be voting on that Tuesday at the Board of Supervisors.
They'll be voting on it this week.
And are they voting on the different options in the environmental impact report, or have they gone beyond that now?
They'll be voting on the preferred alternative, whether they'll either be accepting the preferred alternative or they will not be accepting the preferred alternative. Now, whether they will be pushing it off to another meeting or tabling it for more discussion or not is that will be up to them.
And do you know, are the two constituencies, the kind of rancher constituency and the wildlife constituencies, which I hate that there's even a dichotomy there because there's so much mm-hmm. overlap in both communities, but do you know if they're organizing to show up?
I know that the wildlife enthusiasts are, but I can't imagine that the ranching community would not be present. I'd be very surprised if they weren't.
All right. And Kate Maxwell of the Mendocino Voice, let's turn to you. You cover a range of things because you guys are covering the whole county, right? So what do you think? Which headline do you think deserves a little bit deeper of a dive here?
Oh, you know, that's hard. I was just, thinking about these two other stories that the other reporters are covering. And, certainly those are both kind of long-standing complex situations with a variety of moving parts and actions by the Board of Supervisors and public comment processes and then different groups who have different interests. And those are things that I think are often can be really interesting and are, hugely important issues to our communities to cover. But it's not the easiest thing as a reporter to know how to summarize those at each juncture for readers. So I guess I'll go with a slightly easier one, which is the elections that we have. The primaries here in Mendocino will be happening in March. And there have been some number of supervisor candidates who have been campaigning pretty hard for some time. But the primaries are likely to be a big deal in those elections because unless there is, I guess, in our last supervisors election, when we had like 8 candidates in the 3rd district and things, that's really the moment where voters get to pick, who are those top two. If there's a clear winner in the primaries, then, the voters have sort of spoken. But what we're doing, trying to cover the whole county, is figure out, how can we go to each of these local districts and really hear from people in Mendocino about what issues are important to them and what questions they have for these candidates. And then the best, how can we go interview them? How can we bring this to the people, given that everyone's so spread out, and so it can be really hard to actually go meet your candidate in person, or it can be hard to get to an event if they're speaking. So,
well, give us a little primer of what we're facing in terms of the upcoming primary election. What seats are up? I'm really putting you on the spot now, but what's good thing you're a reporter with a newspaper. What seats are up? Who's running? Yesterday, did you say, was the deadline for people to declare?
So it's the deadline's kind of not a strict deadline because there's these different, you can submit a bunch of signatures and you can pay a fee depending on whether or not the incumbent is running again. That changes the deadline. So we have 3 districts out of 5, and that's the 1st and the 4th and the 5th.
Second.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
First, okay. Second, and 4th.
First, second, 4th. So
right.
It's basically,
so Carrie Brown's seat, John McCowan's seat, and Dan Jurdy's seat.
And so given that that's 3 out of 5, that could look like a very different board come next year. And so obviously you don't get to vote for the people in the other districts, but the combination of personalities really means a lot in those all day long discussions. So
Aiden?
In Lake, I was just going to say that's similar to what's going on in Lake County. We also have three county supervisor seats up. The first, the fourth, and the fifth, those are currently held by Moak Simon in the first, Tina Scott in the fourth, and Rob Brown in the fifth, who's held that seat for many years.
And what is, just briefly, can you describe the makeup of your board of supervisors in Lake County?
Yeah, the first district, that's mostly the Middletown area and surrounding communities like Hidden Valley Lake, et cetera. That's Moak Simon's territory since, I believe, 2016. He's also a tribal chairman. In District 4, just to skip to the seats that are open, we have Tina Scott. That's the Lakeport area. Tina Scott's lived in Lakeport for a long time. I'm not sure exactly how long. In District 5, that's the Kelseyville area, including the Rivieras as well as parts of Cobb Mountain. And Rob Brown has held that seat for about 20 years, I think. District 2, we also have a new District 2 and 3, those are the ones that aren't up. We have new people in there that were elected last year. They took their seats up the beginning of this year. Bruno Sabatier from Clear Lake and E.J. Crandall, who I mentioned before, regarding the Potter Valley Project. That's Upper Lake, North Shore area.
Yeah, so I guess similarly here, we have, the two people that are not up for, not running, the two districts, were newly elected last go-round. Mm-hmm. And so there's only one incumbent who's running again. And so that could look like a Board of Supervisors in 2020 that effectively has, a few years' experience as supervisors. And, whether or not that is good or bad is definitely, it's up to voters to decide how they want to see that go. But it could be a kind of a fresh start. It could be people trying to figure out what decisions they've made in the past and why and how to move forward. So,
and as of this week, we do know who is going to be running in those districts. So can you give us, we don't have a list in front of us right now, but I do know that two of the current supervisors, Kerry Brown and John McCowan, who have been there for decades, will not be running. They've both announced. So you're right, we're going to have a lot of new blood on the Board of Supervisors.
Yeah, and I know I just don't want to offend any candidates out there by as I try and get the list up. But basically, I believe it is only in Dan Jurdy's district that there's just two candidates running, and he's the incumbent. So basically, on the coast, we have an incumbent that's being challenged by someone on the Lindy Peters on the Fort Bragg City Council. The Coast District it's really kind of the Fort Bragg District, but that area is very much its own community. And then similarly, Potter Valley is kind of a bunch of different people who are looking to fill that void of Kerry Brown. And then Ukiah is very much also its own deal. And so, one of those candidates is also the just stepped down from her position, or her time as mayor came up, but is also on the Ukiah City Council. So there's definitely people who are familiar faces to those involved in local politics in their district. And then there's people who might be familiar as community members, but who they're really trying to get their name out there and have people just know who they are.
Well, and you talked about the challenge of covering elections in such a huge, regionally expansive county in this community. And then, of course, Aiden out in Lake County as well. It's sparsely populated. It's hard to, figure out how to conduct campaign coverage, forums, getting really meaningful face-to-face time with the candidates and understanding who they are. But there's that fact of this being a wide spread out community is also a challenge for rural reporters. So let's turn back to your jobs as rural reporters. What are some of the obstacles or the challenges or maybe even the joys of it for you? Let's start with you, Michelle Blackwell from the Fort Bragg Advocate News Mendocino Beacon.
Well, thank you. There's a lot of driving involved, but luckily everything around here is so beautiful that you feel like you're on a Sunday drive. So some of the furthest I've gone is actually down to Ocean Cove in Sonoma County to cover urchin removal. Those are some long days when you drive a couple of hours just to get a story and then drive back. So just, you know, the distance, it's a big deal. And the weather can sometimes be difficult. We were not 100% sure if I could get here today. We're watching 128 very carefully. You know, these logistics are, you know, they do sometimes get in the way, but ultimately it's a pleasure to work here. And we do have a fabulous community that is really open to working with us and talking to us, and they understand that all these issues. They understand power outages and road closures, and so you know, we do get through it all. So it's nice.
And we were talking before about what it means to have to talk with lots of different people. There aren't a lot of media outlets here, no. So you are really discovering and creating the narrative for some of the more in-depth stories that you're covering, right?
Well, a lot of the stories that I cover, for example, the urchin and kelp abalone story, you have to interview, you know, many people from many different organizations to get the full story. You have all kinds of players that are involved. You have the sports fishermen, the commercial fishermen. You have the nonprofit organizations like the Noyo Center, Reef Check, and then you also have the state entities, Fish and Wildlife, and even state parks. So you often have to spend a tremendous amount of time tracking down who the current person is, and getting time to talk to them and ask them the questions that you need to ask to get the full story. And those are issues that you have, but I think those are issues that are pretty much standard anywhere you go. This being able to do feature stories here and being able to spend time on long lead issues like this really is for me a pleasure. And I am happy to do it and to take that time, because I think they're important stories that would otherwise not be covered because of the fact that your papers, like the Lake County paper, you have limited staffing, and they are focused on that sort of, like, you know, what's happening now, what car accident, what crime just occurred, what whatever. And so they really don't have the time to put in to do this kind of research that I do. I'm lucky that I get to do it.
Yeah, go ahead, Aiden.
Yeah, that's definitely a difficulty for us. There's plenty of things that either get called in by a reader who, you know, has a specific issue in their area that they want looked at, to things that come up and seem to merit way more discussion than we're able to give time, you know, or space in the paper on.
And you,
you said, trying to keep up with those daily headlines is difficult to balance when you also want to look deeper into stuff.
Right, and it's such a huge county with so few reporters, and also Lake County in particular is a very poor county, right? It's got a lot of economic challenges. So does that affect the way or the ability to report in Lake County?
I don't know that it affects the ability to report. I think it affects people's lifestyle here. Obviously, median household income is pretty low, about 40,000 a year. Depending on the place you're in, it can be much lower even. Rates of poverty as high as 36%. But in terms of what's reported, I think it does make people maybe even more concerned about what's going on in their community, because there's such an overarching issue with the place trying to get more economic development and sort of pull itself up by its bootstraps, however that may be.
Not a lot of extra resources for doing maybe as much advocacy or civic participation as people want or need to do?
That's true, yeah. Not a lot of resources for that, but definitely a lot of sort of engagement on a personal level from the heart. They care about what's happening to the place because it's suffering in some ways.
All right, well, it is 9:30. That went really fast, you guys. This is Byline Mendocino. We are pulling together a local media roundtable here on Byline Mendocino. We've heard from local journalists Kate Maxwell of themendovoice.com, Michelle Blackwell, who's a freelancer for the Fort Bragg Advocate News and Mendocino Beacon, and on the phone, Aiden Freeman, staff reporter for the Lake County Record Bee. Thank you all for joining me this morning. I hope to have you back.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you very much, Alicia.
Thanks so much, you guys, and thanks for your amazing work here. Coming up, Kate Maxwell will stay with me for the second half of the show to talk about the challenges of running a local newspaper, sustainable business models for a newspaper for media, and an exciting grant from Report for America that will bring a full-time environmental reporter to Mendocino County when we return in just a couple of minutes. And we're back. This is Byline Mendocino, a new local media roundtable program here on KZYX. I'm your host, Alicia Bales. And my guest is Kate Maxwell, publisher and founder of the Mendocino Voice online newspaper. And we're joined on the phone by Mendo Voice editor Adrian Bauman. Hey, Adrian, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me good?
Yes. Victory. Good. Kate, can you talk, or both of you, actually, can you talk, but we'll start with Kate, more about the Mendocino Voice. How did you and Adrian decide to start a newspaper in Mendocino County, and why? Why did you start it?
So, you know, we met each other because we had both worked at the Willits News. And so for those people that don't know, a lot of the local papers here are owned by one company. They weren't at one time. They used to be just your small family-owned town newspapers. But over the last decade or so, they've been bought up by different chains. And at this point, a lot of the papers here locally, most of your the big town papers you're familiar with, and as well as papers from Reading to Eureka through the Bay around Northern California, are owned by a company called Alden Capital, who are based on the East Coast. It's a hedge fund. And so Adrian and I were... Adrian had worked at the Willits News, and I actually took over his job. And we had been kept in touch, sort of talking about these challenges of rural reporting. And, you know, there were a lot of things that we wanted to do and gaps that we saw here in the county, issues that we thought weren't being covered or that we wanted to have covered more in depth. Breaking news was something that wasn't really happening in terms of people having information when they need it. But there was also there's no real countywide news source except for KZYX here. And so there's a lot of things about county government issues. And there's a lot of people in a lot of communities that just aren't really getting any coverage. And, you know, it takes a lot of resources to just print and deliver a paper. And so you can only, you know, when I worked at the Willits News, I could not get the paper delivered to my house. So we sort of wanted to take all these tools that are out in the world to sort of bring contemporary news gathering practices here to Mendocino County and kind of try and fill those gaps and see what we could do to show people what local news could be.
And When was that? How long have you been on this crusade to bring local reporting to Mendocino County?
So we started in September 2016. So we are just a little bit over our 3-year anniversary, and we keep meaning to have birthday parties and then getting distracted by covering local news. It's been an interesting 3 years to start a newspaper, and really, you know, we've spent most of the time trying to really listen to people about what they want. You know, our goal was to do something, to have better local news, whatever that means for people here in Mendocino. And so we try as much as we can to talk to our readers and listen to people and say, you know, how can we best reach you? Do you want a video? Do you want a text? What do you want to hear from these candidates? You know, we're trying really hard to reflect the needs of the community and see what we can do to make sure our new service is reaching people and giving them the information they need in their lives.
Adrian, how is it going? What are people telling you about how you're doing? How many readers do you have, and how do you know, and how do you interact with them?
Well, that's a lot of questions.
I know. Sorry.
So the simple ones first. We have standard counting software on the website that gives us a second-by-second count of how many people are visiting the website, how many pages they visit. This is true for any website you visit on the Internet. And based on that, we average between 45,000 and 55,000 unique visitors to the website. So that's actually unique IP addresses. So some of that might be the same person on their desktop and then on their mobile.
Did you say 45,000?
Monthly, yeah.
45 to 55,000. Some of those are double counted, people who are on their desktop and on their mobile, but only 10% of our traffic is on desktop. So that double counting is actually very small.
But what's the population of the county? That seems like you've got an enormous readership.
So the population of the county is about 90,000. Adrian, you can explain that.
The population of the county is about 87,000 people, according to the 2010 census. It's probably somewhat higher. The internet software only gives you sort of a cursory look. We do get some number of readers from Lake County and Humboldt County and Sonoma County. We get some number of people who used to live in Mendocino County, and will comment on our Facebook page like, "I'm in Ohio, but it's so nice to see what's happening back in Mendo." We get, you know, and on bigger stories, that are notable outside of the county, we will get readers across the state who just Google us and chance upon us. So not all of the 55,000 is happening exactly in Mendocino County.
But part of that is also focus on broader regional issues. So, you know, if we can't cover the individual thing in Laytonville, we sort of look to see, can we talk about these things that do affect a broader range of people, because it's hard to be in all those individual towns at once.
So the upshot is that there's probably like a third of the county tuned into us once every other month or so. There's a smaller group of about 10,000 people that are reading us on a regular basis, which would be probably something more similar to your traditional newspaper circulation rate. And then the larger number is sort of the people who pick you up at the newsstand, if we want to think about it in old-fashioned newspaper terms. So that's the readership's size. So what was your other question?
Well, I'd like to talk about your business model, because how do you make this work? I mean, it's a full-time, more than full-time job for both of you. I shudder to ask what your day-to-day workload is like. But you've got 45 to 55,000 readers. How do you pay for it?
You know, it's funny you say that, because I actually have like several articles open right now in front of my computer as I'm talking to you. We have a fairly traditional business model of running advertisements we're doing an advertising push right now. We also have a substantial, given how old we are, number of subscribers, member subscribers, who are people that pay a monthly contribution. But we are about to make a transition to a completely different business model. We're starting that actually this month. We're starting that transition. And I think Kate can talk more about that.
Yeah, so we, you know, we do a lot of advertising for local businesses. Our advertising is limited to local businesses because we are also a local business and we want to make sure we're supporting the local economy here. But, you know, one advantage that we had when we started is that the costs of being online are really low. So as compared to the amount of money you need to have a radio station with all the functioning things in the tower and everything, or what you need to print however many copies of a paper, which at this point are often printed in another county and trucked around all over here. You know, we can sort of have a website where we can get a lot of information out to a lot of people very quickly, and the cost of that distribution is really low. So up until now, we've been really lucky to have these local business clients who want to reach our local community here. And we also have are endlessly grateful for, you know, we have a couple hundred people who have been giving us money either monthly or at the farmers market to sort of support getting more local news out there and to keep news free for everyone, because we do not want to put up a paywall. We want to be able to make sure that if you need it, whether or not it's an emergency or about the county government, if there's information you need to know to better engage with your world, then you can just read it. And it's free for everyone, even if you can't afford to pay a subscription. But right now, we're super excited because we have a grant from the Lenfest Institute, which is based in Philadelphia. And it's also a joint grant between Lenfest, which is a journalism focused institute helping support new business models in local news, because we all have heard that local news is not what it used to be. Whether or not, I don't want to say local news is dying, but the newspaper industry specifically is really struggling. And so there's a lot of people out there who are looking to figure out how can we fill what's basically being called news deserts. What can we do about these places where maybe they used to have a paper, or their paper used to have 10 employees and now it's really just one full-time staff member for the county. And that's happening here much more than people realize. So we have this grant. It's also part of a Facebook community journalism grant. So some tech companies, you know, have been deciding that they're going to put some funding towards supporting local news because everyone recognizes that this information is really essential and there may not be other places you can find out where to get it. So we are about to turn into a co-op. And
is that what the money from the grant is going to pay for?
Yeah. So the grant is specifically was, you know, it was a pretty broad grant, and we're at LLC right now. And though we don't really, you know, we don't have profits, we're sort of just putting our money towards doing as much reporting as we possibly can. But the grant goes to sort of support our transition into a worker reader co-op. And part of what that will look like is we're going to be holding a membership drive over the next 6 months. And we're going to be having a bunch of events. And basically, we want to talk to as many people as possible here in Mendocino County. We want to hear what you want in your local news. You know, I think we want to frame that as we want to be your local news service. We're trying to move beyond the idea of what you can put in a paper, because there's really so much more that you can do when you start thinking beyond actually what can I fit in this piece of paper. So we're going to be going around the county, and basically we're going to be converting so that there will be actual real ownership from both the people that work at the newspaper and for all our readers. And so that will mean that they will get an actual say in budgetary decisions. It will mean that we can make sure the local news we're providing is really exactly what people need and want, and that there's no chance that there's sort of this outside company coming in or these distant owners dictating what they think should be happening here on the ground in Mendocino.
I'm curious if this reader staff co-op, what that means editorially. You know, are there other models of this co-op paper business model in the country, and how does that affect editorial decisions, and what, you know, are readers going to be calling in and telling you what to cover and what not to cover? How's that going to work?
So there is one other news organization right now that's based, they basically launched last month, and they're in Akron, Ohio, and they're called the Devil Strip, and they are also doing a news co-op. And so they're doing really great work. Their focus, being a big city, is sort of how do we build the local economy together. Here we're also concerned about being resilient as a community over this sort of big county distance. But Adrian's our editor, and so we do have these ideas that we feel like the co-op are going to really strengthen our editorial coverage and make us, you know, more representative of actually who lives here in Mendocino. But Adrian can talk more about that.
Adrian?
Yeah, the simple answer is that the editorial staff will remain independent from the co-op board. The co-op members will vote on a board. The board will have a similar role to a publisher, and there will be a wall of separation there and editorial independence. So it's not just that everybody with their pet peeve issue can call in and demand an article. But I think it's a little more complicated than that. I think that there is an assumption that newspapers today have a great deal of editorial independence, when in fact they don't as much. I don't think they have as much editorial independence as they think they do, and they don't really. I mean, again, these newspapers are owned by large chains. The chains are kind of hands off on an editorial level, but the fact that you have to court advertising dollars. Has always, I mean, going back 200 years, that has always shaped what ends up in your newspaper. Very literally, traditional newspapers are as long as the number of, there are as many pages as the number of advertisements that they can sell. And if they get enough advertisements for 50 pages, then they have to make up more articles to fill that up. And if they don't, then they have to cut articles to do that. And so there's always been this function of editorial influence that happens through that kind of advertising. There's always been the function of editorial influence that happens through the incredibly powerful billionaire owners of newspapers, going back to William Randolph Hearst, or in the case of the New York Times recently, they sat on the NSA Snowden revelations, or before Snowden leaked them, but they sat on those revelations for 3 years because of the cozy relationship between the publisher and the presidency. So what we actually, rather than thinking of it in terms of will the co-op affect editorial control or limit editorial independence, we actually think of the co-op as something that's going to liberate us from previously existing forms of editorial control. Once we are owned by the people of Mendocino County, then we will be beholden to the people of Mendocino County, not to special interests, not to small groups of elites, not to out-of-county and out-of-state billionaires who own us. We will be directly beholden to our members. Hopefully our members are several thousand people, right? It's not just going to be five guys with their pet peeves. It's going to be several thousand people. And so I think that's a way to... that I think we need to begin looking at this, especially in the era of something like Sinclair Publishing, which is this far-right company that owns like half the TV stations in the United States now and forces them to all repeat the same party lines.
It's kind of a familiar model for us here at KZYX. Because this is the membership, the member owned, the listener supported community radio model, I think founded by the Pacifica Network in the World War I days, I think, back in the turn of the 20th century, and a really rich now opportunity for us to collaborate with you.
Yeah. So, you know, I think people here in Mendocino, a lot of people are familiar with a co-op. You know, we do have the grocery store. This is going to look very similar sort of to being a supporting member of KZYX, except we sort of want to take it one step further and sort of let you say if, you know, have our voters, our readers decide, do we want a new health reporter, a new, you know, do we want to do a special project on housing for the next 6 months and take this extra budget towards that? And, you know, likely have a public editor that will sort of serve as a direct function of just what the readers need and want and make sure that we're serving them. But we have another grant that, you know, is sort of part of this whole effort to really look at what do people here in Mendocino want and need, and how can we kind of as a society as a whole, but also how can we here as a local community get together and say, you know, we want information about certain things. What can we do to bring better reporting here? And so we just got a grant with KZYX from this organization called Report for America, and their whole mission is to really try and fill these gaps in local newsrooms and also to train a next generation of reporters that maybe used to be able to get these jobs, but, you know, at newspapers, these jobs almost no longer exist anymore. And so it's new or forward thinking organizations like us and KZYX that are trying to step up and fill those gaps. And so we are going to be getting a environmental and natural resources reporter for the county that we're going to share. And you should check out Alicia's previous coverage of that issue. But we'll be hearing much more about that. They're going to be coming on in June, and their applications are open now. So it's sort of another example of how can local communities come up with these creative ways to fill these really important informational gaps and really address the needs of what's going on with all these different environmental and natural resources issues here, Potter Valley, the wildlife management plan, almost everything we've talked about kind of touches on that.
The oceans, the climate, the fires, all of it. I know I find the Report for America organization so interesting because they're looking at the situation that we're facing here to some extent with the contraction of the local reporting infrastructure and the kind of being bought up by for-profit business models, hedge fund, and when the effect that that's having on the media locally across the county. And so they have this program where they place individual, they call them emerging reporters, but reporters who are maybe in the beginning of their career. And like you said, they don't have a lot of options for where to apply for jobs because the industry is contracting. But they're also, Report for America is also looking at how to increase the capability of local newsrooms to find alternative funding sources, to find community funding sources. They're looking at the survival of local media in the whole country. And they're placing 250 reporters this next year. One thing I also want to mention about it is that they are willing or they are happy to place local reporters in local newsrooms. It doesn't have to be some out of town person who comes and gets placed from, you know, from a journalism university or something. So those applications are available online. I know you guys have a link at mendovoice.com. You can also look at reportforamerica.com, I think. But the application is there, and they're accepting applications until the end of January. Yeah. So, and that's something that's available for locals here too.
Yeah, we would love to have, you know, I think one thing about reporting in a rural place or sort of reporting on the local level is, you know, people don't always realize the amount of many hours of driving or sort of the time and resources that do go into actually just getting that story and doing it well and getting all those perspectives. And a lot of times for young reporters, if they just end up sort of at a nationally focused thing, you know, if they never get that experience really being in a community and hearing from people about all these different daily things, that's a really valuable, essential reporting skills of just learning how do these kinds of even city council decisions affect people's lives. But, you know, an outsider, there's a lot to learn by sort of being dropped into a community like this. And I think that has increasingly happens in places where there are these news deserts because there's just so few jobs that a lot of times you will and they often don't pay more than minimum wage. So you'll have a 22-year-old who kind of shows up for the year. They don't know much about where they are, and it's not a sustainable way to keep going. So they take off and go somewhere else. And so certainly we would love to have anyone here in Mendocino that thinks that they might be a good fit for this. The candidates usually do have journalism experience, but, you know, part of our goal and, you know, part of what KZOX does so well is really we want to be able to share the voices and the perspectives and the stories of people here and really say, you know, we want to make sure we're covering all those perspectives, but have that be coverage that really reflects what people care about and the kinds of solutions that they would like to see happening here in their own lives and communities. So apply.
Apply. All right. My guests are Kate Maxwell, who's the publisher of Mendocino Voice, and Adrian Bauman, who is the editor of Mendocino Voice. Both of them are founders and full-time staff at the paper. And you can check out Mendocino Voice at mendovoice.com. We just have a minute or two left. And so, Adrian, I want to give you the last word. You're calling in from Chicago. Anything else you want to add to our discussion here this morning?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of people have said that the internet is destroying the news industry. It's led to the destruction, and we're never going to recover some sort of glorious heyday. But I really want us to try to envision this as an opportunity to reinvent something improved, something more thorough, something more inclusive, something that everyone can have a say in, and they can provide more services than just a simple chronicling of the latest crime and the latest statements from politicians. That we want to work with our co-op members, with the people of Mendocino County, to try to reinvent this, what it is that the kinds of information that we're putting out there. Certainly, we're going to keep doing lots of hard news, but there's a whole plethora of other kinds of basic information that doesn't get published anymore, that used to maybe 70 years ago. It used to be part of these incredibly thick omnibus sorts of newspapers that were published routinely, but it doesn't get published anymore. And we want to try to fill that role and work with our readers to do that.
All right. Well, Adrian Bauman and Kate Maxwell of the Mendocino Voice, thank you for joining me today on the first edition of Byline Mendocino.
Oh yeah, we're so glad you're doing this show, and hopefully we can bring even more talking about local news events to all of people in Mendocino County coming soon. Get ready for more.
Yeah, I hope to have you guys back on regularly. Thanks so much.
Great to be here.
Bye-bye. So this has been the first edition of Byline Mendocino. I'm your host, Alicia Bales. I will be alternating every other Friday with Bob Bushansky and Politics, a Love Story. So we're going to be alternating Friday mornings at 9 a.m. Coming up now is The Wondrous World of Music, 2 hours of classical music with Gordon Black. I want to thank you very much for listening this morning. It's kind of an experiment. I'm excited. It seemed to have worked. So I look forward to coming back in 2 weeks with more local reporters talking about their work and keeping you up to date on local headlines from around the county and around the region. And with that, I'm going to sign off and leave you into the able hands of Gordon Black. So have a great day, everyone, and a great weekend.
Well, I'm trying to read my Sunday Times. It costs a nickel and 12 dimes. I bought a late Saturday night. I've almost finished, but not quite. It weighed a ton. It seemed to me that each one of them must take a tree to make it. And also, I should think it takes about a gallon of ink. Right off the bat, it's section one. Who, why, where, how, and what got done. How it looks bleak. It's clear to see that section one depresses me. All the heavy-duty news, it gives you the over-informed blues. And I'm so relieved when one's all through. Thumb through one, get on to two. I'm a showbiz kind of guy. The business is my life. Yeah, that's no lie. Two's one of my favorite parts. Entertainment, leisure arts. Which movie's great? Which Broadway play? Exclamation points away. The next time that things get this great, as sports way up in section eight. Into my lap and take some time out to heave some crap. I guess some guys dig section three, but business bores the pants off of me. If you want boring, here's a chore. The weekend review, that's section four. Now who in the hell wants a review? Once was enough for me, thank you.